Good evening.
Good evening.
We have a very honored guest tonight. So happy to see you, Henri. Henri is an old friend of Samia's, whom I and some of you may have met at her house. We should do introductions around so you can hear the names. You won't remember. You won't hear them either. It's okay.
Julian.
Ritu.
Wendy.
Russ.
Fred.
Henri.
Samuel.
Donald.
Henri is a wonderful artist. He's been painting for many, many years and had a retrospective about a month ago, I guess. Very, very beautiful work. We're just about in the middle of this book. We're on the third section. Of books, it's book three, and we're on page 55.
He instructed, those who study the path must let go of mind.
We did that one last time.
Oh, remember.
Yes, it's the second one.
Once a certain nun asked, even worldly women strive to study for the Buddhist teaching. As for a nun, even though there may be slight imperfection in her person, I do not know why she should not be fit for the Buddhist teaching. What about it?
Dogen said,
Buddhist
teaching is
not
interpretation is wrong. Although it happens that laymen do study the Buddhist teaching while remaining as they are, and do have some attainment, if a person who has left home does not have the heart of a leaver of home, she cannot attain.
It is not that the Buddhist teaching chooses among people. It is because people do not enter into the Buddhist teaching. The standards and mentalities of leavers of home and householders must be different. The householder has the heart of a leaver of home. He can escape. For a leaver of home to have the heart of a householder is a double fault.
The fact is that the approaches must be much different. It is not that the doing is difficult, it is that it is difficult to do well. Because in spite of the fact that the journey of escape to find the way seems to be on everyone's mind, those who really accomplish it are rare.
The matter of life and death is gone. Impermanence is swift. Do not relax your mind. If you abandon the world, you must abandon it truly. As for temporarily established names, let them be what they may.
So this is one of those especially ambiguous collection of statements. What does it mean to abandon the world? What does it mean to leave home? What are a temporarily established names? I think what he means by the last, temporarily established names, is whoever is important in the world that people look up to. Maybe some of them are like the lay person with a flaw, or the nun who isn't really a nun. He's really talking about intention. We can't measure our own practice, much less anybody else's. But practice is about intention. And home leaving, in the conventional monastic way, is to actually leave home and say goodbye forever to everybody and not even go back if your old mother is dying. That's living your intention in a 100% way, you could say. You say, I'm going to give my life to Buddha, and you take off all your regular clothes and wear nothing but monk clothes and eat nothing but monk food and commit your whole life to the practice of the way. But of course, it's very easy to do all of those things and still not really have a clear intention. There are many reasons for wanting to be a monk, for instance. Sometimes it solves some kind of psychological difficulty, gives one somebody and something to be. Sometimes we don't really know who we are, so the feeling is, well, if I just become a nun, then I'll be somebody. But that isn't the Buddha way. The Buddha way is to be whatever is required for the moment. And it's the same as a lay person. Just emphasizing whatever role we're playing as if that is who we are, is what he's talking about. We don't have to do that. We can just be who we are, as we are. And another one, he talks about this further. In fact, in the next one. So it's basically about our intention to practice, our intention to be the way. And we don't even have to call it a Buddhist way. It's just living the truth. Being the truth as we know it. Not somebody else. And not doing it halfway. Is that what you understood out of it? Is that what you got? Are any of us fit for Buddhist teaching? Yes.
What is the first bit about women?
Well, it's about being fit for Buddhist teaching. Even worldly women strive to study for the Buddhist teaching. As for a nun, even though there may be slight imperfection in her person, I do not know why she should not be fit for the Buddhist teaching. What about it? This is somebody asking Dogen. And Dogen says, that's wrong. He says, it happens that lay women do study the Buddha's teaching while remaining as they are and do have attainment. It's this kind of a mixed up sentence. I think that's why it's confusing. If a person who's left home doesn't have the heart of a leaver of home, doesn't have a real intention, but some other idea that she's cultivating, she cannot attain. And some who stay at home do attain, do have some attainment, is what he's saying. So it isn't what you decide to do either way, which is good for us, because we're all homestayers. We're homestayers who have left home, essentially. And the crucial thing that he says here is it is not that the Buddha's teaching chooses among people. It is because people do not enter into the Buddha's teaching. It's not that we're selected. There's some religions who feel that they're selected by grace, by the grace of God, and they just lucked out. And everything is wonderful because of that. But in Buddhist practice, since it's not a religion, it's about our own intention and our own action, how we ourselves step forward and embrace our way, our own way, our way of truth. Honesty, kindness, love. So it's not so easy. Donalyn?
So they, in regards to relative or absolute truth, it's relative that this is the way it looks like, that you leave home, you shave your head,
yes,
and you become a house leader in terms of being more of the absolute. But what's really going on is our intention and our relationship about entering the way.
Yes.
And clarifying that, is I was still thinking back to when we were talking about Buddha's birthday, thinking about, you know, these myths, and then I was thinking about when Buddha left his wife and child. And again, as a myth, I'm sensing, because this always kind of just bothered me, that this man would leave his child and wife. Again, it's the story, it's the relative, what it would look like that he left, but this is the way I'm viewing it now. And I've talked a little bit about this, but that, you know, in the relative truth, the way that it looked like is he left everything. He left the palace, he left his baby, he left his beautiful wife, he left his parents. You know, he, you know, gave up everything. And I think that him being a prince is what made it so, again, made the story so poignant or strong, perhaps.
And gave up worldly power.
Right.
Now.
Right. And then, in the absolute sense, I mean, we don't. I mean, I've always thought, well, to really practice, I have to leave my home. I have to leave my, you know, I've thought about leaving my mortgage and, you know, other things. But it's, and it's very interesting, I believe, how as Westerners that we are connecting more with the absolute versus the relative. Because that's how it looks like in Asian countries.
Kind of. I don't quite see that last part.
Well, about that there are more temples in Japan or
I see, France, I see.
And they actually really still do eat.
Yes.
Well, you don't think those numbers are down, but...
Well, we have that opportunity also. Any one of us could go to Tassajara, and they don't usually let you stay more than 3 years, but there are several people who've been there their whole life. And Zen Center in the city, they're asking people now to leave. They think that having people living there long term is not a good idea. And some people aren't leaving.
Hasn't it been their home?
It's been their home their whole life.
Are they just becoming homestayers then?
Yes, they're homestayers. That's exactly right. So it's tricky. It's very tricky. Yeah.
So I was going to say, yeah, because then it's just turning it on its head, because then you're attached to a place and you don't want to leave.
Yes.
Isn't the whole thing just, you know, I've struggled with it. I'm like, you know, and being like in your 20s and 30s, I just want to go and have no stuff and be free, but there's no such thing. Yes. You know, it's kind of like you can own stuff, but it doesn't own you. And so if this can have a house and love it and take care of it and have people and love them and take care of them, but yeah, it's the intention.
Yes.
You know, and you can also just have none of that and have no intention and just still have all of that attachment, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's what makes us so miserable. It's not what we have, it's that we hold on to it so tightly and imagine that it's real. Mm-hmm. It's just ideas. Even our house is an idea.
This dust bunnies really don't exist.
Oh, right. The dirty windows.
Thank you. That's, yeah. That's, I mean, I, yeah. Mm.
If we go on, there's a little bit more about this. I think this is the one where he continues the discussion.
Three?
Yes.
In an evening talk, he said, "As I look upon the people of society in the present time, those people who obtain good results and promote their families are all upright and straightforward of mind and are benefactors of others. Therefore, they maintain their homes and flourish even through their children and grandchildren."
As for people who are crooked in their minds and malevolent toward others, even if for a day it seems their results are good and their homes maintained, eventually they turn out badly. Or even if they appear to pass their whole lifetimes without trouble, their posterity will inevitably decline.
Also, when doing good for others, if one does it with a wish to be well thought of and well liked by that person, this may seem better when compared to evil, but it is still thinking of oneself and is not really good for others.
Even though it be unknown to them, one who does what is good for others, even for the future, though not thinking of whose may be the benefit, who provisionally does what would be good for the sake of others, is called a truly good person. Though not thinking of whose may be the benefit, who provisionally does what would be good for the sake of others is called a truly good person.
Well, no more should a ragged monk uphold a mind which surpasses even this. The consideration of sentient beings does not distinguish between familiars and strangers, maintaining the will to help them equally, even though they do not think it will create profit at all of mundane or transcendental benefits, and is neither known nor liked by others. The monk simply does what in his heart, what is good for others, and is not himself known by others to possess such a mind.
The rule for this is that one must first abandon the world and abandon one's own body. If one just truly abandons his body, he has no mind to wish to be well thought of by others. If, however, you say, "Let the people think what they may, and doing you bad things, indulging yourself," this also goes against the will of the Buddha.
Just do what is good. Carry out good deeds for the sake of others, without thinking of obtaining a reward or of glorifying your name. Being truly without possessions, work for the benefit of living things.
Thus, the most essential point to concentrate on is detach from yourself. If you would maintain this mind, first you must contemplate impermanence. A lifetime is like a dream. Time passes swiftly by. Dew like life rapidly vanishes. Since time has never waited for anyone, and as long as you are alive for the time being, you should think of being good to others, even in respect to the slightest manners, in accordance with the will of the Buddhas.
Colvin used to encourage people to be householders. A lot of people fell in love with Zazen and wanted to go to the monastery, and Colvin said, no, get married, have babies, stay home. And don't tell people you're Buddhist. Don't breathe a word. Don't make a big deal out of it. And he said, because of this very thing, that you can practice in the world and do a lot of good if you're not trying to be doing good. That if your practice is clear and straightforward, then naturally follows that you are a good person. Zazen does that for us. It doesn't mean that we're perfect people, because we mess up a lot. But it means that, generally speaking, the intention of sitting becomes the intention to be a certain way in the world, a detached way in the world, so that we're not so possessed by the things and the people that we want to keep, and more willing to give ourselves away into whatever situation arises. Dealing with it in a generous way rather than a self-serving way. It's the fruit of sitting, really. Without trying to be well-liked by others. They're always the society ladies who go swooping into the ghetto and kindly and very self-consciously do some good works and then talk about it over tea with their friends, sort of polishing their image. It's very different when you're just addressing the situation that you've got, whether it's a sick child or a dog that got run over by a car, or whatever our family situation is, including the garden and the neighbors and all the things that happen to us day after day after day. We're constantly encountering situations. And I often think we're constantly encountering compassion in ways that we often don't recognize, and being helped in so many ways. And we ourselves are compassion for others. And often we don't even know it in many ways. And practice is to just be aware of where we are and be willing to act. In a way, it means kissing ourselves goodbye, but that's too dramatic, you know, to abandon one's own body. But it's not even like, I'm willing to die for this. It's just going out and doing what needs to be done, and being modest about it and humble about it. Nobody needs to know. I think these two go together rather well. The consideration of sentient beings does not distinguish between familiars and strangers, maintaining a will to help them equally, even though he does not think of his own profit at all, of mundane or transcendental benefits. Transcendental benefits. I mean, oh, if I do good, then I'll get good marks in heaven. You know, I'll be a good Buddha or a good Bodhisattva. Must be. And is neither known nor liked by others. He simply does in his heart what is good for others, and is not himself known by others to possess such a mind. So our question is, what is abandoning the world and what is abandoning the body? He's certainly right that life is very short and can end at any time. We all know it. But it's a goad to action if we really take it in and accept it. So what can I do? Nothing very dramatic. Just what there is to be done right now and right here, wherever we are. I think even walking along and smiling is a big gift to everyone, and a completely selfless one. But you notice if you smile, just a little smile, people smile back. They always do, and they feel better. So, what a simple gift. We can do that anytime. There are lots and lots of things like that we can do. Questions? Well, I wish us a lot of luck, as usual. Life is hard, and how fortunate we are that we can do this. So it's 8 o'clock.